The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Race to savings for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support you need with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
I definitely always had this personality where I like to have a voice. As I became a model in my teens, it was like the mid-90s, right? So we had all these supermodels and every little girl wanted to be a model. And going to these parties and inviting to these events and dinners. And then I would travel to LA or South Africa for work or to Greece. And I was just starting to experience that lifestyle and I really loved it. I've had certain experiences that I always felt like I could handle. So the other model that was on the shoot came to me and said, you know, we have a day off tomorrow and I have a friend who owns an island that's very close by. And I'm gonna go, do you wanna go with me? And I was like, yes. We got ready for dinner and then we went to dinner and we all sat together and enjoyed like a really lovely dinner. And then maybe like a quarter way through of hanging out there, this man walks up and he introduces himself as Jeffrey. He sits down next to me and he's really engaging and charming and funny and he just has this way about him that makes you feel really safe and comfortable. His whole demeanor changed. He was definitely very, very different at this point. I felt like I couldn't leave the room. I just wanted to get off that island. It just changed everything for me and my trust in men, for my body, my trust in myself.
As an Air Force brat, Lisa was always the new kid, constantly adapting, reinventing, and searching for new friends. Though naturally outgoing, her multiracial identity often left her feeling uncertain of where she belonged. And genuine acceptance was hard to find. But that all changed in her late teens when she started professional modeling. Inspired by 1990s icons like Cindy Crawford, Linda Evangelista, Kate Moss, and Tyra Banks, Lisa was drawn to the high fashion allure, a world where she could finally be seen and celebrated, especially as the industry began to broaden its definition of beauty. Success came quickly, and by her early 20s, Lisa was living the dream. But a spontaneous trip to a tropical island would change everything. What seemed like a glamorous escape soon unraveled into a harsh reality, shattering her illusions and forcing her to pay a devastating price.
I think I was always an extrovert and always a person who really liked meeting people and engaging with people. I wasn't a very shy little girl. I enjoyed being on stage. My mom entered me into like a beauty pageant. And I was Miss Congeniality. So that tells you a lot. I wanted to be adored. I wanted attention. I didn't have a strong connection with siblings, older brother, younger sister. I had great parents, but I didn't get that affection and those hugs. So I would look for it in other ways. People liked to see me performing and I would light up people's faces and make them feel good. And so I definitely always had like this personality where I like to have a voice. My dad was Air Force, a lieutenant colonel. So every 3-4 years we moved somewhere different and vastly different, from the States to Europe, back to the States, back to Europe. And so I was constantly like reinventing myself in new schools, and I had to refigure out like who I was. My parents didn't raise me as a certain color, so I never grew up thinking I was like a Black girl or a mixed girl or a woman of color. They never really said that kind of stuff to me. They just raised me as a woman. My family moved to Virginia when I was like 13 or 14. I had always lived in like white neighborhoods. And then that was the first time I was exposed to multicultures, all different types of cultures. And I dealt with a lot of bullying. I didn't talk the same way a lot of like the Black girls did, you know, because I have the same upbringing. And so they thought I was different. And if they came over to my house to play and hang out, they would see like the Team Bop on the wall and be like, why do you have that white boy on your wall? And it was like all these things like, oh my gosh, I'm brown, like I'm different, you know? And like, oh, I need to be cooler like them, listen to their music and put the Black boys up on my wall. But I wasn't like that. So they really thought I was different. And so they would push me down the stairs and pull my hair. But I always stuck up for myself. I don't know where that came from, but I was not a pushover. So I was getting in these fights and things just because of the way I looked. And so I didn't fit in with the Black girls. They didn't like me. And I didn't fit in with the white girls. And then to hang out with the Latinas. I never really had my tribe, my people. Like, I didn't really fit in. I don't think I really understood who I was until I left home. As I became a model in my teens, it was like the mid-90s, right? So we had all these supermodels, and every little girl wanted to be a model. It's just all we ever talked about. And the models were gorgeous and smart and successful. I hit 5'8" and a half at 13 years old. So I had the height. I was also always very thin. So I was just kind of what they look for at that time. And I was also very exotic. I was multiracial, which a lot of people weren't back then. I started getting into modeling in New York City around 15, 16 years old. And then my family moved to Europe. We moved to Belgium. I don't think I really paid much attention to guys that much. They've never really been that important to me. I didn't date then as a teenager. My dad was strict. I was not dating. He wouldn't let me date. So I didn't have those experiences really in the States. But when I moved to Europe, when I was 16, then I did. When I was younger, all I focused on was like modeling business. I was obsessed with it. My school, my friends and things like that. I would travel to like London or to Paris, trying to get an agency or for work. And then after high school, I moved to Miami Beach, where it was like the heyday, you know, where you saw Jennifer Lopez or like all the big movies are filmed there. And it was actors like everywhere you went, you know, and tons of TV commercials. And I was like the TV commercial queen from when I was very young. I did tons of TV commercials. I was always like in a trailer, you know, getting my hair and makeup done and on sets, and being around these celebrities was really exciting, and going to these parties and these invited to these events and dinners. And then I would travel to LA or South Africa for work or to Greece. And I was just starting to experience that lifestyle. And I really loved it. I was like 18, 19, 20. I was treated like an adult. Yeah. And I think at nightclubs, I don't think they even care that you're 16, 17, 18. They let you in. And just being raised by my father, I felt like I had really good boundaries. And so I wasn't dating a lot, and I wasn't falling for the lines or things like that. I was assaulted on a movie set, and I stood up for myself right away. I felt like at that time I was good. I didn't really have anything major, but there were definitely photographers or agents that were trying things. I was very independent. I traveled all around the world by myself. It wasn't a big deal to me. I never thought about it. If I had big goals, someone would say, oh, well, I hope you make it. Well, in my mind, of course I'm going to make it. You know, I never really thought. When I had goals, I always thought I was going to achieve them. It just never was a doubt in my mind. So at that point in my life, career was everything to me. It's all I thought about. It's all I planned. It was my first love, and it was definitely what I wanted. I didn't struggle much. So things were pretty easy for me because I had the height, the size. I was exotic. So things moved very quickly for me. I never had a problem getting agents, and I always had top agents and managers. And others in the modeling business, they would just do things to you. And the agents, you'd go tell them like, so-and-so is touching me. And they'll say, oh, well, you know, they won't do anything about it. It's just like, this is a wonderful opportunity. Like, just be quiet. You know, I've had certain experiences that I always felt like I could handle. Even when I booked a really big magazine cover and spread, like a story inside for a British magazine, I flew to the British West Indies with another very successful model. She was a Polish model. And when I was there, the photographer was hitting on me so much. He had like crawled into my bed at night. I was like, gosh, just get away from me, you know? But I was trying because he's a photographer and I got to shoot with him in a couple days. I just was trying to be cool with him and I didn't want to like make a scene or... So I had to like fight this guy off of me and then he had went away. But I was like, it made me feel so uncomfortable. So things like that. It's like, you got to keep quiet because then I got to do the shoot with all the crew. And like, I don't want to make a big scene. How am I going to do a cover now? I'd probably be sent home or somebody else would come. So yeah, even this, that small power dynamic with not even a super famous photographer, he's still trying to get what he can get. And he was probably really attracted to me. I don't think he was a predator, but I think he was just attracted to me. And maybe I wasn't like, no, stop. But I was maybe flirting a little bit back because, you know, I was uncomfortable and I didn't really know what else to do. So there are situations like that, that so many models and actresses have those types of situations. So the other model that was on the shoot came to me and said, you know, we have a day off tomorrow and I have a friend who owns an island that's very close by and I'm going to go. Do you want to go with me? And I was like, yes, I definitely want to go because this photographer has been really creepy with me and I don't want to be here by myself. And so she's like, okay. So the boat came and we went across the sea over to Little St. John's. So there was Tortola where we were, there's St. John's and there's Little St. John's. And so we went to this beautiful island and, you know, we played in the ocean a little bit and then we played in the pool and there was two other young blonde girls in the pool. And there was also like an older man who was, you know, kind of a handsome older man, brunette. I was just thinking that this was a very normal situation. As a model, I had been to a lot of mansions in the Hamptons or Miami, where it was always like an older man who owned the home and there were always young models there. So I didn't really think anything differently from seeing like older men, kind of younger girls being around, you know, beautiful young girls. In New York, the agency owners that were women, they would invite me to parties or events or charity events that also had older men that were there, that they were their friends and we were all younger. I didn't think anything of it at that point. So he hung out there and hung out with the girls and we had a really good time, you know. there was no alcohol, you know, just eating fruit and just hanging out and getting to know the other two girls who were from Florida. We got ready for dinner and then we went to dinner and we all sat together and enjoyed like a really lovely dinner. And then maybe like a quarter way through of hanging out there, this man walks up and he introduces himself as Jeffrey. So I'm like, okay, it's nice to meet you. And he sits down next to me and he's really engaging and charming and funny. And he just has this way about him that makes you feel really safe and comfortable. And he was chatting up the other girls and they seemed to really look up to him and admire him. And the girl who brought me really admired him. And we actually had a really good dinner. And he asked me many, many, many questions about myself and how I grew up and where I traveled. And I told him that I lived in England from when I was like 0 to 4. He was like, wow, do you want to meet a prince? And I was like, yes, yeah, just playing along, of course. And the man who was in the pool earlier that day had walked up and he introduced me to this man. And I said, hello. He said, hello. And he talked for them for just a little while. And then he left. Didn't really think much of that. And then Jeffrey asked me a lot of personal questions about how I grew up and my relationship with my father and family and if I was close with them and my aspirations and my dreams and my goals. So I enjoyed my conversation with him. I felt kind of important because he gave me all these compliments that weren't normal compliments, but your body and your face and your hair, or, you know, you're pretty, nothing like that. It was compliments like, wow, you're going to be successful. You have very powerful energy. Use those type of compliments that I've never really heard before, especially coming from a man. And so I felt good. And so we all said goodnight and we went to our room and I was just hanging out with the other girl. There was like this bathroom shower, like outdoor shower. We got ready for bed. And so I was just hanging out with her on the bed and just talking with her and stuff. I felt very comfortable, safe and seen. And the girls that were there were very comfortable too. I felt safe there, even though it was two older men and there was four younger girls. And I looked very different from the other girls. You know, I'm multiracial. They're all blonde, blue-eyed. So it was like, interesting. I'm not their type. So I wasn't thinking anything at that point. I just thought, oh, wow, this is kind of a cool little trip. I was thinking the evening was over. We would go to sleep and the boat was going to pick us up the next day. That's what I was told. We got ready for bed and then there was a knock at the door. And one of the young girls peeked her head in and said that, you know, Jeffrey's ready for his massage. That was the first moment where I was looked at the other girl like, what's going on? And she just said, oh, yeah, Jeffrey likes massages. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, good luck. Have fun. Go enjoy your massage, you know, but I'm not doing a massage. She's like, no, you need to come. And I'm like, why me? I was like, I don't know how to do a massage. And she's like, he just likes massages. It's just a straight up massage. And I was like, okay. So she said I had to go. And she dragged me out of the room and went over to his room, his bedroom. And so I'll never forget, it was a bedroom. So I was like, this is so weird. We went in and he was lying naked, you know, on a massage table. So I was like, okay. And so she started doing massage. And then he was a little more playful and asking more personal questions, like, we have a boyfriend. And asking questions about boys and trying to be like really sly and flirty. And his whole demeanor changed. He was definitely very, very different at this point and probably looked like really excited, you know, maybe something was going to go down. And she was looking at me like, you can't leave. You need to help me out here. You need to massage him. Just follow my lead. And at that point is where I knew things were very, very different because I felt like I couldn't leave the room. And if I did, I was on a little island. In my head, I was like, can I just leave? And I kept saying, like, can I leave? Because I don't know how to touch a man, a grown man like that. And she had the kind of that fear in her eyes, like, no, 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 we have to. If he says we need to do a massage, we have to do a massage. And he does like massages. It was a massage, right? So that's his whole thing. It's he does like massages and he does like pretty young women to massage him. So he was directing us through a massage. But after a while, the massage turned into a sexual assault where he assaulted both of us. And that's when everything changed. That's when it was like, whoa, what have I done? What's going on here? And I just was like, just extremely confused. I didn't understand why she brought me there. Or I just assumed because she was young too, she was just a victim too. But I was kind of mad at her because did she know what was going on? So all this stuff was going through my head and I just wanted to get out of there. And it was so weird how he was acting because, you know, he's not a straight up rapist. He's, you know, very easing you into the grooming process of trying to get what he wants, but trying to also make you feel very comfortable and trusting him. So it was like this weird feeling. I've never been like fooled or tricked that way before. And so I was confused because why was she bringing me into this room? You know, so it was, the whole thing was so confusing. I didn't even really know what to say to her after. I just wanted to get off that island. I just couldn't wait. I wanted to go leave that night, but we couldn't. It was pitch black out. And so I had to literally sleep in that bed and wait until the morning. And still thinking he was going to come back or, you know, I was really scared. I remember just like looking up the ceiling, you know, the entire night. And she didn't really give me much. She didn't really want to say anything. And I know he had paid her. He had paid her because she had $400 on her. And she tried to offer it to me on the way back. And I said, no way. I don't want it. The boat was sent for us in the morning. We jumped on the boat, you know, and left and went back to Tortola. And we did 2 more days of photo shooting where that photographer, he came anywhere near me. I just gave him the death stare. Something totally changed in me where I was like, don't fuck with me. I was so traumatized. After that, it just changed everything for me and my trust in men. I was very strange with men. Didn't trust them, didn't date. It had changed a lot in me for my body, my trust in myself. Like, I think I felt disgusted in myself too, you know, and a lot of shame. So emotionally, I wasn't the same person after that assault because I wanted to suppress it, not think about it, not talk about it to anybody. I didn't know about therapy really. And I didn't talk to my friends about it because he was also a very powerful person that everybody liked and talked about in a high regard. So I just kept it to myself. But my personality changed. where I got a little bit more reckless, and I started doing drugs, where before that I would be like, oh, gross, get that away from me. Or you're doing drugs, like, this is disgusting. Why are you doing cocaine? Like, people smoke pot. I'm not a pot smoker, but I would try harder drugs back then. If everyone's dropping ecstasy, I would do it and did that a few times. So I just was changing. My personality was changing. I would start drinking alcohol, and I did it because it works to suppress a memory. It absolutely does work. So I just would forget about what happened. I was early 20s. I wanted a career after this experience, and I started hanging out a lot more, you know, and networking a lot more and being more in the scene. It definitely changed in that way. But I think I don't know if I would say self-sabotaging, but I was doing things, I think, to punish myself a little bit. I was very much a little more of a goody two-shoes, and I was not anymore. So I felt like tainted. This is just my transformation after going through something like that. It was a negative transformation at that point. Then I started dating like more high-profile men, successful actors. So I was never into the music guys. I liked actors. I dated quite a few actors, big actors too. But just hanging out a little bit more in the scene and things like that. We were talking about a 3 or 4 month period until I saw Jeffrey again. After I got back to New York and my life was spiraling more out of control, I had his people calling me all the time, several times a week. And then about 3 or 4 months in, Jeffrey called me. And he said to me, Lisa, I remember what you said on the island, that you wanted to be a Ford model. And I say, oh, yes. And he was like, well, I'm really good friends with Katie Ford. Do you want to meet her? And I said, yes. And so that was it. That was the turning point, because now he had helped me out. And I thought at the time, good, like, you owe it to me for what you did. Like, oh, you're trying to like get back in my good graces, or you're trying to help me out. Good. And oh, he remembered that I wanted to be a Ford model. This is awesome. He remembered me. He feels bad about what he did to me. So like, I had this attitude. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go get mine. Okay. He wants to introduce me to Katie Ford. Fine. So I went and met Katie Ford, and then Katie's like, I love Jeffrey. So I'm like, oh, wow. So she respects Jeffrey. So maybe he's not such a bad guy. If she loves him, it's Katie Ford, like the owner of Ford Models. And so I began working with Ford Models at that point. And I became friends with Katie Ford, and I started going out with her and Andre Balaz, her husband, and going out with like the important people in the modeling industry. And Jeffrey did that for me. And so I started thinking, oh, well, maybe he's not a bad guy. Maybe what happened on the island, maybe it was my fault. So I started thinking like that, like a lot of victims do. It was my fault. And so then I became more into Jeffrey's world, because as I said, Jeffrey's not a playboy. Jeffrey was a powerful person that people respected. And he would invite a lot of young women to charity events, big ones, and concerts and things that were intertwined with like what Katie Ford was doing, or the owner of Next Models. And so women were his friends. Faith Cates was also his friend. So I knew these agency owners. And so I thought, okay, everything is fine now. So then I started hearing weird things. Some of my friends would meet with Jeffrey because, oh, you know, he's big in the art world, so I want to meet him, you know. And Jeffrey, he helps girls out with college and their acting career. Everyone wanted to meet Jeffrey because he helped everybody out. So that was his way, is actually helping. He actually did what he said, and he would help a lot of young women. And I'm talking about the 18 and over, the beautiful, successful girls in New York. So these women, he was actually helping out. And so I would be around these young women who talk highly about Jeffrey. So it was just a very confusing time for me. But I had a best friend. She was blonde, beautiful, successful, smart. He was from Minneapolis, from a very good family in Minneapolis. And she was friends with Jeffrey. And she had a very different relationship with him. Like, I think she traveled to Paris and Florida with him. And she came to me one day and said, Jeffrey is not who you think he is. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she started breaking down and crying. And I'm like, what's going on? And she was like, he's just not a good guy. And I'm like, well, I'm starting to feel that way because of certain things he was asking me to do. You know, he was getting mad if I wouldn't do them or meet people. So I'm like, what's going on? And she was like, he made me meet up with somebody. And I was like, well, who? And she told me, a prince. And so I was like, where? And he's like, in his Upper East Side house. He made her go into a room with the prince and have sex with him. And she didn't want to do it, but he made her do it, you know, because, he made her do it. And so I'm just like, who is this man? Like, what is going on here? So we had called some other friends and we all started talking and like, what is he doing to you? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, well, he called me up the other day to meet with Mick Jagger and Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, we all hated Ghislaine because she was creepy. And I was like, Mick Jagger, why would I go out with Mick Jagger? And I was starting to feel like, and Jeffrey got mad when I wouldn't go meet with Mick Jagger. And I'm like, why would I meet with Mick Jagger? So it was just this very confusing thing. Then I said to this girl, the very first time I met Jeffrey Epstein on his island, I met that prince. Because she showed me a picture and I was like, that's the same man. She's like, that's the same man. So this is a 4-year period. I met the man in 2000. She had sex with him in 2004. And so I was like, there's some creepy stuff going on. Literally, within months, we both moved out of New York City. It was so bad that I left and I moved to Los Angeles in 2004. To get away from him. There was no other reason. It was to get away from him. Because he never really went to Los Angeles. He had really nothing to do with LA. So everything he did was in New York or Florida. We were all kind of scared of him. And then 2 years later, things came out about what he was doing in Florida with Ghislaine Maxwell with underage girls. I saw Jeffrey one more time after that to confront him. Like, what is going on? And he told me he'd like to have things on people. I like to have things on people. And I'm like, okay, but I'm out. I just can't. I was scared to death of him. Since I was a child, I wanted to model. I wanted to act. I definitely wanted to be an actress. I did so many acting classes, went to NYU. I just always wanted to be in this world and stuff. And when I had my son Leif in 2006, I just couldn't be in that world anymore. I hadn't confronted everything from my past. And I also just didn't feel comfortable the way that, you know, people would treat me. And I just couldn't handle it anymore after becoming a mom. And so that's when everything changed. I left the modeling world because of that. I would have been a model actress forever, but I only left because I had kids. I just took 12 years off just to raise my boys since I was a single parent since they were 4. I just raised my kids on my own and just put everything into them. So I had heard about what Jeffrey was going through here and there, but I didn't pay that much attention to it because I was just trying to go on with my life and not focus on it. I had moved back to New York City and lived there for 8 years. And then right before 2019, I had moved back to California and I had met a man, fell in love. First time I was really in love, ready for a super healthy relationship. This is the man I'm going to be with for the rest of my life. But in 2019, when really everything was coming out, I started looking into it a little bit more and just trying to just understand it a little bit. I was sitting on the couch and the news came on. I was sitting on the couch with him and the news came on and it had said Jeffrey Epstein had hung himself in prison. And I just remember at that moment, my whole heart sank. My heart was beating so fast and I just started crying and I almost let out like if somebody super close to you had died. And that's the first time I've never had anyone super close to me die in my entire life yet. Thank God. So that was the first time I ever felt that way. And I was just like, but he's a horrible person. So why would I have this reaction? You know? And it's because he was a mentor to me at some point. I was so confused or brainwashed, groomed to still think that he cared about me at some point, that he did things for me because he cared about me. So I had that still in my mind. And the boyfriend at the time who looked at me, he was like 12 years older than me too, you know, and he looked at me like, why would I have that kind of reaction? And he didn't comfort me or he didn't even ask like what was going on. And so I kind of ran into the bedroom and I just kind of cried and I just didn't really understand. I was almost like having like a breakdown because it was the first time in my life that that pain was released because he was dead. I couldn't release it while he was alive. I couldn't speak out while he was alive. I would never do that because I would probably feel like I was betraying him. But after he died, it all lifted for me. And I just was it was different after that. And after that, I was like, I need to talk about this. I need to talk about this. I need to find out what was going on. I need to talk to the people back then. I was searching for answers. I was ready. And so on the way, I remember my boyfriend was getting ready to pick up a Tesla. He was all excited. I was in the car with him. And I was like, remember when I kind of had that breakdown the other night when Jeffrey Epstein died? And he's like, yeah. And I said, I want to talk about it. I want to talk about what happened to me back then. And he literally put his hand in my face and said, I don't want to hear about it. And I was just like, huh? Like, I didn't know how to interpret, because why wouldn't you want to hear about it? Like, I have this incredible story to tell you of someone who I'm confused about. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was amazing. I thought he was a mentor, but I was ready to start talking about the fact that this man used to abuse me. And he took it more like, I don't want to hear. He's probably a playboy and, you know, and all this stuff. And oh, he's your sugar daddy. And I'm like, no, nothing like that. But he didn't want to hear it. And I remember just like feeling so alone, not seen, and feeling like he didn't care about me. And I knew in that moment, this man didn't care about me. He's the wrong person for me to spend my life with. And I never trusted him again after that. I still didn't leave him until 2021 because I couldn't. The pandemic happened and I couldn't get away from that man for like another year and a half. In 2019, I started speaking out only because my friend was forced to have sex with the prince. That's why I started speaking out. It wasn't because of any of my abuse or anything that went on with me. I was never going to speak about it. I wanted to stand up for my friend, and I wanted to stand up for the young Australian girl who was abused by the prince. And she started speaking out about the prince, and nobody would stand up for her and say they were also abused by this man. And I knew, because I saw her there with him, that she was telling the truth. And so I spoke out because in 2000, I saw Virginia Dufresne with the prince on Jeffrey Epstein's island. And then in 2004, my best friend, also blonde young girl, was also forced to do something with the prince. So I knew what happened with Virginia because I saw it. And I knew what happened with my friend, my best friend in New York, because I said I saw him. I started speaking out in documentaries. I started speaking to survivor sisters. All I wanted was to talk about it with people who have empathy and who cared about me and who maybe had the same experience. So I started reaching out to survivors and a lot of the underage ones from Florida, because they had the exact same story, but they were underage in Florida or they were overage in New York. I kind of got to know a lot of the underage girls from Florida, and we became friends, and we had very similar stories regardless. I talked to lots and lots of my friends, over 20, 30 of them that knew Jeffrey Epstein, but majority of them wouldn't speak out about him because they got somewhere in life because of him. And of course, they have good lives now and they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want their husbands knowing. They don't want anybody, you know, to judge them. And I understand that. I'm a very, very private person who didn't talk about this for 15 years. And then when I started speaking out about it, it took me maybe 3.5 years for me to start talking about my story without crying about it. I had so much trauma, and it wasn't just from that situation. A lot of times you go through trauma when you're a child or a teenager, when you're young, and then you make bad decisions based off of that. And so I started to understand my decision-making, my relationships were all because of trauma experience when I was younger, you know, a failed marriage, and then that failed relationship with that guy buying the Tesla, with that blending my family, and then, you know, not working out. And that was the time when I was really in love. And then going into after that, I went right into a relationship with a man that I thought was my best friend, who saw me on TV and wanted to be the religious man who wanted to help me out. And I'm read devotionals to me every day. And I'm here, listen to me, like talk to me, tell me everything. When he was an abuser and he had, you know, childhood abuse. And so he was just an abuser. And so I'm like, why am I attracting all these crazy narcissistic sociopath men? And so I had to go to therapy to be like, you know, I've got to be able to choose the right partners and have boundaries. And then through that, I had to confront everything of my past. Going through therapy, EMDR therapy, realizing and owning it, the good, bad, the ugly, and being able to just forgive myself or forgive others, and understanding that I was innocent in the situation, and that, you know, when it speaking to me in that way and letting go of the shame and all that stuff that goes along with it, then, and which is basically this past year, got to the point where I was like ready to start speaking out. For myself, speaking out, if I was talking to someone who has never experienced any type of trauma, and the way they would ask questions was almost like they were looking down on me. I didn't like the way that felt. So I really wanted my podcast to be survivor to survivor. Like, I understand you. I've got you. Everything you're saying, you know, I've experienced like something maybe equally as horrible. So don't worry. You know, and a lot of times they tell me stuff that's really, really triggering to me. Like, oh my God, that happened to me. And I mean, that's the reason why I created the podcast, because I was finally ready to start telling my story. But I didn't want to tell it. I didn't want to tell it just me telling my story. I wanted to do it with inviting other survivors and telling their story. And we kind of tell it together and educating and empowering together, more so than just me up there just talking. I took 12 years off to go on the management side of things. I have to say, I am super excited to be back on the camera side of things, because that's where I feel most at home. It's where I always started from a child and what I always wanted. Podcasting feels that side of me that I always wanted. So it makes me really happy. And obviously, like, I just want to do more, I don't know, advocacy work and helping others and bringing more awareness. That's really important to me. I am raising 3 incredible young men, and I do not want it to give up. And I'm a boy mom. I believe in the power and the beauty of men. And I know there's many good men out there. So I don't think all men suck and they're horrible. I do not believe that. I believe we have really great men. And this is also how we're going to have great men, by educating them of how women think. Or if you understand, if you listen to an abusive situation instead of judging it, like, oh, what was she wearing? Where was she going? You know, she shouldn't have been there. No, listen to what she's saying of what happened step by step, so you understand. There are other men out there that are doing these things. It's not just someone grabbing her and throwing her in a bush. And they're like, oh, why did she go to that house? Well, why wouldn't she go? She's not going to think that she's going to be assaulted there. Why wouldn't she think that the guy is going to be a nice guy that maybe could be a boyfriend one day? Love is within the family I created with my boys. I have experienced the most powerful form of love that I think I was always craving throughout my life. And I have that with my 3 boys. That's what I always want to go home to, was them. And that just feels good to me. I mean, I don't have the love from a man, a partner yet. I do want that. I do. And through therapy, I'm feeling like, for the first time ever, my therapist is always like, it's been 9 months. When are we going to manifest the man? I'm like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. You know, you're manifesting your career. You're manifest everything you want. It comes true. I said, but not the man. And I'm always scared of it, you know, because I'm still working through it. So this year I might manifest the man. This year I'm starting to date. I'm actually, I went on my first real, real date, you know, this year. So there is power in telling your truth. Right? And speaking your truth. There's so much power in it. Don't be afraid. Because a lot of times it's the one thing that will set you free. It did for me, and I really believe it will for you.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
When I spoke with Lisa, I asked her how her upbringing helped her handle the success she had, and also in turn, the dangers she faced.
The situations that I just told you that do happen on your way to your dreams, and people take advantage of your success. And, you know, there's men who try to take advantage of it, you know, of opportunity or whatever. And then there's predators. And that's the difference. With the predator, you don't see it coming. You have no idea what's happening. They're just too smart, right? How I navigated the world was very, very different than a lot of people do because of what I saw. But it also gave me so much confidence to know how to navigate it. Like I told you how I grew up, I was pretty confident in what I wanted. That's also what attracted all these types of men. They like that. When women know what they want, you know, and are assertive, they're attracted to it. But they also know, these are ones I can also take advantage of.
I also wanted to know how modeling and acting has evolved since she began, and what her return to the spotlight has been like.
I cannot be silenced anymore. That's where the shift is going to change, because when people, yes, are assaulted, they're speaking out, where predators have always relied on the fact that all the victims stay silent. Women who are ambitious are preyed upon because there's a power dynamic for the person who has the power to change the course of your life. And you could either go with it or not. And usually it's not that bad, or you know, certain things happen and you can deal with it. It's funny, and people think it just happens when you're young. It can happen to you anytime. I had met with a producer the other day, and literally he stuck his hand right down my shirt. And I was like so taken aback because he doesn't know my story. And I was just like, why would you do that? Like my face, like I'd almost started crying. Like, why would you touch me like that? And then from there, I wouldn't even see the guy ever again. Like I would never go anywhere near him. But maybe if I was younger, I'd be like, okay, well, he's a big producer. Maybe I need to go back and just suck it up. Sometimes these men, they think they can touch you. And he was just being playful. I don't know if he's a predator or not, but he was just being playful. But that was like, why would you touch a woman without them saying, giving you a green light, you know, to touch her?
I asked her to share any misconceptions about Jeffrey Epstein. And if there's any information she'd like to share that would help others recognize a serial predator with power in the modeling and acting industries.
I never heard anything about Jeffrey Epstein prior to meeting him. But after I paid attention and his name was brought up here and there, but it was always in a very positive light with young women and with agency owners and other people. It was never a negative way. He was respected, you know, and he wasn't a playboy. He didn't give girls drugs or alcohol. So it wasn't like a P. Diddy situation. Everybody knew about, you know, Puff Daddy back then in a very vile way. But Jeffrey was like a mentor and people trusted him. Jeffrey always uses another girl to make the girl feel comfortable. Like, you know, with Ghislaine Maxwell in Florida. That's his way of saying he can't just straight up abuse you, you know, because he'd been found out way earlier. But it's always like the coercion of another girl who has groomed to do what he asks. And not just me, majority of my friends that I knew during that time, a lot of models knew him very well. He had changed the lives of many people that I knew, put them through schools, got them visas, introduced them to their husbands, huge things, got them acting positions, introduced them to directors, the TV hosting jobs they have today, lots of big things. So he was the type, that's why I say he's very different from Diddy, who's straight up like a psychopath, abusing and raping and not doing anything to help anybody. Jeffrey helped people. He really did. I think that's why he thought he was a philanthropist and helping all these young women. But that's what was part of his sex trafficking ring, is that he helped people because then he's, oh, Jeffrey's so great. You got to meet him too. And then everybody wants to meet him. You know, so he was very smart. He always met young women because they introduced them through their friends. That's how I met him. That's how my friends met him. So it was very much a very intelligent sex trafficking ring that JP Morgan and others were financing. And that's a fact that JP Morgan was financing. It's a fact that these agency owners were sending him models. And he sent me to Ford Modeling Agency. And she was also, I know this because of the emails after the JP Morgan discovery, she was sending models to Jeffrey Epstein. The owner of Next Models was sending models to Jeffrey Epstein. He was very powerful and he was getting what he wanted. And he was recording and taping all the powerful men that were involved. He was just paying everybody off and silencing everyone. Yeah, he was, yeah. And people were scared of him. It's fear. In hindsight, I know the reason why Jeffrey kept me so close during those years was because of what I saw on the island. And I knew it because I wasn't supposed to be there on that island that day. I wasn't supposed to be there. I saw something I shouldn't have seen. And that's the reason why he fought so hard for 4 months to get me in his good graces. And the only way that he did was by making my career better. He made my modeling career better. He put me with an agency that now, you know, I had to do kind of what he said or be part of his world, because he got me with a top modeling agency. And he also introduced me to directors and producers and things like that over the years. And so what he gave me, he could take away. So I was scared of him.
I also wanted to know the impact that therapy has had on her life.
Now I know with therapy and stuff like that, but I'm just assuming back then, I know it was just a shame that I was acting out and trying to suppress the pain and the confusion of what I had went through. And I didn't feel the same type of value for men. So it was just a difference. You know how they say when women are assaulted and stuff, they get more promiscuous, or, you know, they abuse drugs and things like that. I believe it's absolutely true. It's because you don't feel good about yourself anymore. until you've gone through that therapy to realize that it's not your fault and you were innocent. Until I went through that therapy, which was many, many years later. But back then, I did not feel that way.
And then what does she wish other people would understand about her situation before passing judgment?
Most people just don't understand because you don't, unless you're in this situation, to really understand like what they're saying, what they're doing. But you see it. A lot of abusers that are powerful, they aren't just raping you. They're doing little things, little by little, to get off on. Even if you look at like a Larry Nassar, right? 250 gymnasts. He was friends with all the parents and all the young girls trusted him because he was the one that was like helping them with their gymnastics career. He could have ruined them easily by saying, oh, her ankle's like all messed up. She can't compete. He could have taken anything away from them. And he was just doing the same thing like Jeffrey, using his fingers and tools. Yes, it's very different from like a Bill Cosby. Lord knows what he was doing because they were all unconscious. But like some of these men are just using their fingers and their vibrators and things like that to abuse. And that's what they get off on. And people need to understand it's not just like throwing a girl behind a bush and raping her.
And finally, what impact does she hope her podcast from now on will have on both guests and listeners moving forward?
I want someone who has gone through the full arc of their experience. So yes, you know, they're going to talk about an assault or abuse that happened, but it has to be like, how did you get through it? What was your healing journey like? And what are the educational points that we can use to help others who are going through the same thing that you're going through? That's important to me. Not just someone who's coming out there who just wants to blab about their ex. Because we get a lot of those too. And it's like, wait a second, you've got a great story, but where's the teaching moment? You know what I mean? And like, are you healed? You don't sound like you're healed. You sound like you just want revenge. And I'm not down with that. And I think because I've always been a little bit like mature for my age. So I've always felt like a protector and I'm an empath. So I feel things from others. So I'm not surprised that I'm doing the work that I do now. I think my life has like built me up to this point. It's so funny. So many friends would always tell me their problems. And I was a little bit more of a therapist because I'm a really, really good listener.
Lisa was drawn to the glamour, the opportunity, and the promise of a modeling career. And for a while, it truly felt like a dream come true. But what began as ambition quickly turned into years of silence, self-blame, and trauma. She kept her pain hidden, believing she had to endure it in order to survive an industry where power is often abused. Though she faced disaster, she ultimately overcame it, not just by surviving, but by reclaiming her voice. Her abuser manipulated her trust and used her dreams against her. She, in turn, tried to regain control by using him too, but the scars remained. People often judge without understanding, never realizing the complexity of keeping an abuser close or the pressure to stay quiet for fear of losing everything. She didn't speak out initially for herself, but to protect others. This is not just her story, it's one of many. She reveals how predators like Jeffrey Epstein gain privileged access to vulnerable women by exploiting their trust, hopes, and silence. While she faced rejection from a non-supportive partner and was forced to find validation elsewhere, she turned to podcasting, where her truth was finally respected. Her series, From Now On, offers connection, visibility, and healing for survivors like herself, those who were assaulted, abused, and threatened. Through her story, she's turning pain into purpose, helping others find strength in speaking out. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating or relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer. The information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.